Hello and welcome to the Nourish Balance Thrive podcast. My name is Christopher Kelly and today I'm joined by my good friend Torrea Rodriguez. Hi Torrea.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, good. We're broadcasting in glorious mono from our Bonnie Doon studios and it is raining. I promised Torrea the sunshine and it's raining. I can't believe it's August in California and it's raining. Whatever next. Today we're going to talk about chocolate.
Oh, my favorite. I love to geek out on cacao and chocolate.
For those of you who don't know Torrea, Torrea has an undergraduate degree in biochemistry and chocolate is one of her favorite subjects. But before we get into the details, Torrea, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? You've been on the podcast a couple of times before.
Yeah.
And you have an incredibly interesting story. And I will link to these in the show notes for this episode. And okay. I would encourage people to listen to those. But can you just give us the potted version to encourage people to go and listen to the full version?
Sure. Let's see. So I did my undergrad in biochemistry and for a while went into technology and worked in the tech industry in Silicon Valley and hated cubicle life, decided that I was going to become a professional pilot. So I went through all the training, became a professional pilot, started flying charter and for corporate, a couple corporations in the Bay Area. And it was at that time that I did a routine medical exam, an annual exam actually before my FAA medical. And she found that there was a problem with the thyroid. So we started doing some investigation. It went along with a lot of fatigue. I wasn't recovering very well, sleeping a lot, like crazy 14-hour nights of sleep and still feeling like I was run over by a Mack truck the night before. And so we started doing further investigation and that's when we realized that I had Hashimoto's and found an endocrinologist, was working with him, got to the point where I wasn't able to pass my FAA medical. And I went into him with a month remaining and I said, we need to fix this. I'm going to have to stop flying. And he kind of didn't really know what else to do with his roster of stuff. So he kind of reached into his tool bag and was like, well, you know, the only thing that I can do now is we can irradiate the thyroid and cut out the rest of the tissue. And that's when I put the major brakes on. That wasn't an experience I was ready to go through and started turning towards more natural healing. And in that process, realized that with Hashimoto's being an autoimmune disease, it's not, I don't have a disease of the thyroid, really. That's kind of like the secondary effect of autoimmunity. Mm. I have a disease of the immune system. Mm-hmm. And the immune system is where I needed to focus my attention. And so in that process, fell in love with biochemistry all over again. So it's kind of come full circle.
This time it mattered.
This time it completely mattered, which is a huge difference when you're just in a stack of books at university. And so now this time it was me, it was my life and it was my health and it was how I felt and I wanted to figure it out. And so I fell in love with it again and found FDN as a certification. So I decided that I'd get certified so I can help other people. So now you and I do very similar roles.
Right. Yeah. The function of medicine has been a force necessity. Yeah. And you have a lot in common with Fabian Popa, who I interviewed, and he talked about his recovery from antibiotics injury. And the thing that you both have in common is you're extremely bright, technical, you enjoy the technical details, and you've come to functional medicine as a tool to fix your own problems. And you're actually further down the road than Fabian. I don't know whether this will ever happen for him, but certainly for you now, you use those same tools and techniques to help other people recover their health. And yeah. I think it's the coolest thing in the world to see people take charge and just get it done, you know?
Absolutely. And it's totally possible. And there's been a lot of really great recoveries in both my clients and your clients. And I think it's a fantastic tool, not only for recovery, but also for ongoing health. Mm-hmm. Like you and I will do labs on a regular basis on our own.
Yeah.
Kind of for fun, but also kind of as a checkup. Right?
Yeah.
And I were just looking at my blood chemistry a few minutes ago and it's like, yeah, it's a checkup and things are actually looking great compared to where they were a couple of years ago. But there's a few things now that I can tweak and work on. And
I just interviewed Jeremy Powers, who is the national cyclocross champion, and he is running blood chemistry every month.
Yeah. One as extensive as the one that you run?
Almost, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So that's amazing.
I think the testing is a powerful tool. And, you know, if you are interested in the testing, you can come to the front page of my website and book a free consultation and talk to someone about testing. And then I think there's an important, but perhaps subtle difference between the types of people that we work with. So I work with athletes, mostly endurance athletes. Can you talk about the sorts of people that you work with, Torrea?
Yeah, I work with people who have either autoimmunity, one form or another. Doesn't have to be thyroid. It can be rheumatoid arthritis. It could be something else. Or I also seem to attract clients who have a lot of difficulty. They've tried elimination diets, which are a very effective tool, but I think sometimes they get used for too long. and can really cause some trouble if you're not also looking at the functional medicine and the biochemistry and the co-infections and all of those other things. And they end up with these really crazy food intolerances. Like I have people that come to me with, they're down to 10 foods.
Oh, really? I never see that.
You don't see that at all. And I see that quite often. And we work together to really focus on detox and liver function and gut function. And over a period of time, that starts to get better and they can start reintroducing foods again. So I've had a lot of successes there too.
Cool. Yeah. TorreyaRodriguez.com.
Yes.
Okay.
Show notes, because it's impossible to just yeah, hear it and know how notes. To spell it. So look at the show notes.
Okay. So that's who you're talking to. And like I said, today's podcast is all about cacao or chocolate or cocoa. It seems to have many synonyms.
It does. And when you get into it, the geek snobbery in me, it's cacao.
It's
like,
cacao.
That's what I'm interested in. Like chocolate at the store becomes more of a confection. We'll talk about that later. But
you know, I'm going to talk about some of the evidence that supports the consumption of chocolate. And I think that's not really going to be a difficult sell. I think that selling chocolate probably
should be... What, you're telling me I can eat chocolate every day? Are you kidding me? That's an easy sell.
And I should probably make some disclosures here, which are that I am selling chocolate, literally selling chocolate. So if you leave me a 5-star review on iTunes and then email support@nourishbalancethrive.com, I will ship you a bar of excellent chocolate. So this is going to be part of what we're talking about today, is that we think that chocolate has been misrepresented, it's been bastardized, it's been turned into a trouble food for no good reason. And the bar of chocolate that I'm going to ship you, it's made by a boutique manufacturer from New York. The company is called Fruition. It's 100% bar, so there's no sugar in it. And it still tastes awesome because it's really good quality chocolate. So yeah, leave me a 5-star review on iTunes and I will send you a bar of chocolate if you send me your shipping address to support@nourishbalancethrive.com. Offer limited to the first 100 5-star reviews and US residents only. And I'm also going to start giving people a bar of chocolate when they spend more than $100 on supplements in my web store. So there's a couple of ways that you can get hold of this amazing chocolate, or you can just buy it from me as well. I'll put a link to that in the show notes too, if you prefer that way.
So Tommy sent you these articles and you sent them to me and I was reading through them and I was fascinated that there's a lot of flavonoids in chocolate. But tell me a little bit about, like, how does it compare to wine? Like everybody says, oh, wine's so great for flavonoids. Like what's the deal with cacao flavonoids versus wine flavonoids?
Yeah, so the problem with the anthocyanins in wine is they react with other compounds in the wine and end up in the sediment. So the flavonoids in wine are not going to be as available as they are in other foods. And then there's berries, anything with color, red onions, red cabbage, apples, green tea, all of those foods are going to have the flavonoids in them. But cacao has the highest concentration of flavonoids, so it's of interest for that reason.
Very cool. And then there was also some other effects that we saw in those studies, most notably blood pressure and blood sugar. So talk about blood pressure for a second.
So it would appear that flavonoids, they increase the bioavailability of nitric oxide, and that leads to vasodilation and a decrease of blood pressure. And it doesn't sound like much, 3 millimeters of mercury, but that is actually a huge reduction in risk. And it is as effective as the first line of antihypertensive drugs. So, you know, just taking cacao could be as effective as taking a drug.
That's fascinating. I know that a lot of my family members are on those drugs and, you know, would they have needed to be had they been eating cacao on a regular basis?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is strong evidence, and I'll link to the evidence so that people can review this for themselves. But I'm talking about evidence that came from the Cochrane database of systematic reviews, and they had a paper called The Effect of Cacao on Blood Pressure. They've basically taken a whole bunch of reviews that were published online, and then they filtered them and looked for publication bias, and then published the findings, like combine them all and publish the findings based on several other studies. Most people consider the Cochrane database of systematic reviews to be a very high standard of evidence.
And then the other question that I had for you, Chris, is that ketogenic diets have worked out really well for you and really well for me and also for a lot of our clients. And so blood sugar is something that we look at and are always concerned about increase to blood sugar. These reviews and articles that you sent me were talking about the effect of cacao on blood sugar itself.
Mm-hmm. So there's one trial that showed a significant reduction in fasting serum insulin, and that was 2.65 micro IUs per milliliter. And then also insulin after a glucose challenge, there was a reduction of 17 micro IU per milliliter at 30 minutes after a glucose challenge. So it would appear that the flavanols in cacao may improve insulin sensitivity, as well as having this beneficial effect of increasing nitric oxide and lowering blood pressure.
Now, would you say that what you just read, to simplify it a little bit more, is that when we eat food, we have a normal response with insulin to that food, depending mm-hmm. upon how much sugar is in that food that we eat. So what you're basically saying then is that that curve response, that peak that we get of blood sugar, is actually lower.
So it may be that the cocoa flavanols, so all of these mechanisms, I don't think they're well understood.
Of course.
Yeah. And, you know, that's how this type of science works. It starts from the top and works its way down. So they only bother looking at mechanisms once they figured out that it does something interesting, right? So I think they're still trying to figure out these mechanisms. But my understanding was that the flavanols in cacao, they affected tyrosine phosphorylation and may act like insulin itself. So it's almost like you're taking insulin.
Oh, fascinating.
With the food that you're eating, even though it's not insulin.
Right.
So yeah, I'll link to a Khan Academy video that I found helpful, and it's called Enzyme-Linked Receptors. And they talk about tyrosine phosphorylation and insulin receptors in that video that people might find helpful. So we first discovered that cacao had this blood pressure lowering effect by studying this group of people called the Kuna Indians. And the Kuna Indians live on an island just off Panama. And it was noted that their blood pressure was lower for the people that lived on the island than the islanders that went to the mainland. And so they were able to figure out there was something special about something that they were doing with either their diet and their lifestyle. And they eventually pinned it down to the cacao consumption, which was 10 times less in the Indians that went to the mainland. And they were able to isolate the cacao and separate it from anything else, including salt intake. And so that's how we figured out that cacao has a blood pressure lowering effect. Now, what's interesting is that the history that came before this discovery, and that comes with Christopher Columbus in 1502, who discovered the cacao from these Indians, and he brought it back to Europe,
where the Europeans thought it was too bitter.
And so they used processing, including heating up to 120 degrees, mixing it, alkalizing it, adding sugar, milk, vanilla, emulsifiers, and turned it into what we know as chocolate today. And as we'll get into a little bit later, there may be some problems associated with what Christopher Columbus did with, maybe it wasn't him personally, maybe he just brought the cacao back.
And I think other he people. Probably just brought it back, yeah.
Yeah, so like I said, selling chocolate should be like selling sex, but there is some evidence to suggest that it lowers blood pressure and improves insulin sensitivity. And regarding the dose, it's difficult because it really depends on the type of chocolate that you're eating. It's going to very much depend on the type of bean, where it's grown, how much processing was done. But in the Cochrane meta review, they were looking at 6 grams of the flavanol, which is equivalent to 100 grams of dark chocolate. And just to give you some kind of baseline, the Fruition bar that I'm selling is 60 grams of dark chocolate. In fact, it's 100%.
But can we talk about dark chocolate for a second?
Yeah, okay, let's stop there and talk about dark chocolate.
Yeah, so let's talk about dark chocolate. So when you read that 6 grams in the Cochrane review, mm-hmm. did they define dark chocolate in terms of what percentage of cacao was in the bar?
That's a really good question. I'll need to go back and check. And I think you're right. It's not. It's certainly not 100%.
Right.
So it's going to have some milk and some sugar in it. And I think, if I recall correctly, that it was 60% dark chocolate.
Yeah, so typically dark chocolate is defined as anything that's over 60%.
Right.
The percentage is 60% or higher. Mm-hmm. That percentage, so that your listeners know, has more to do with identifying the percentage of cacao in a bar. And a lot of times these bars don't even have a percent.
Right.
Which, when it's actually a candy bar, they're not required to put on a percentage.
Okay.
But if they are going to say it's dark chocolate, for example, and differentiate themselves, usually it comes with a percentage, and really paying attention to that is going to help them determine which bars are going to have more cacao in them to get these flavonoids.
Right. Yeah, I'm just looking at the Cochrane paper now, and it's very non-specific. It says containing 50 to 90% cacao, which is almost useless. It's so non-specific. But there's another study that I will, of course, link to. And that was a randomized controlled double-blinded crossover trial where they looked at 10 grams of cacao in a very low caloric, 38 calories, with 80 milligrams of flavanol content. And that was significant in their findings. So I think we can conclude from this that you do not need that much cacao to get some of the blood pressure lowering and insulin sensitizing effects.
Yeah. So, I mean, the bar that you're talking about is 60 grams, and that is 100%. So that's going to be a much higher concentration of the flavanols than 100 grams of dark chocolate that's 70%, for example. So, yeah,
so let's talk about
need to eat a whole bar.
Right. Which I can easily do.
So,
but yeah, let's talk about the quality of chocolate, first of all, because there's lots of things I've been introduced to since I've moved to America that I previously thought I didn't like. And now I realize that I just never had the good version of that thing. So tequila is one example. I thought that Jose Cuervo was good tequila, right? And then somebody somewhere introduced me to good quality sipping tequila, and it was just totally changed my world. And I don't drink that now, but I got the point at the time. And then chocolate is another thing. I thought that I only liked chocolate with milk and sugar in it. Mm-hmm. And I can remember as a kid really liking the white chocolate, which is not really chocolate at all, is it? It's just cocoa butter and sugar. Yeah, so has literally none of the flavanols that we've been talking about in. So, you know, it was Terea that introduced me to really good quality chocolate. And then I realized that I could enjoy the flavor as long as it was a really good quality chocolate. So I'm sure there's some people listening that are thinking, no way, I'm not eating 100% dark chocolate. That's going to taste like shit. And some 100% dark chocolate does taste like shit. Like, go
baking
on to
chocolate.
Yeah, exactly.
Horrible.
So I tried this. Like, after Terea introduced me to this chocolate, I thought, you know, screw that. I'm not paying $12 a bar for, I'm going to go onto Amazon and just get some 100% chocolate. I'm sure it's all the same. And this stuff turned up. And first of all, it's like chalk. Like, the texture of it is like chalk. And it does. It tastes, it's bitter
so
as all hell. And now, once you taste that, you can understand why they want to do all this processing, in particular, the dutching, which is just to reduce the
acidity. Let's talk about Dutch processing.
Yeah,
you actually researched it, and I just knew it was a bastardization of chocolate. But tell us a little bit of what it does and how it changes the effects of cacao.
Yeah, so it's just a process that alkalizes the chocolate to a pH of between 7 and 8, so fairly neutral. But that process can reduce the flavanol content to less than 10 milligrams per 100 grams. So that's about 0.001%. So the dutching process basically removes the compound of interest. I've been drinking fat fiber, which is my MCT oil powder, in a raw cacao beverage. And you can get this from your local hippie supermarket. It should be in the bulk bins. But be careful that you don't get the Dutch process version, because it may taste better because it's less acidic and less bitter. But they've removed the compound of interest, which is the flavanols.
People would say that that's kind of like drinking decaf coffee. What's the point?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So it's kind of similar to that.
Exactly. So yeah, the sugar thing I think is interesting as well. Obviously, for me eating a high-fat ketogenic diet, I can't eat a lot of dark chocolate with sugar in it. You know, even 60% dark chocolate, and I'm sure I would have considered that very dark when I was 18 years old. That's surely enough sugar to knock me out of ketosis if I eat even more than a couple of squares. So that's not going to work. And do you think that, you know, the dark chocolate, you know, you work with a lot of people that have problems with sugar and cutting sugar out of their diet. And do you think, you know, is there a level in your mind, or is it very individual, where, okay, if this person's eating a lot of dark chocolate, but it still has a certain amount of sugar in it, it's going to reinforce that addiction and they're not going to be able to break the vicious cycle?
Yeah, I usually tell people to up it to 80% or higher. Like, you know, if you are still eating a lot of sweets and your taste buds haven't normalized yet to a different way of tasting food, because when you get rid of the sugar, you start to actually taste flavors of food again. I think we were at dinner together not too long ago, and I was talking about how absolutely sweet these vegetables were, and I was really concerned about how much sugar content were in them. It was summer squash. Like, who thinks that summer squash is sweet? But it was really, really sweet. And so your taste buds will change when you take out the white sugar from your diet. And so, but I start people at 80%. Because I know they're getting a high enough percentage of the flavanols that are in the cacao to get the beneficial nature of chocolate, but they're not getting as much sugar.
Right.
So I start them there.
People's palates, they readjust and everything tastes sweet. You know, it was something that I used to say all the time too. It's like, Julie, did you put honey in this? Is there sugar in this? Like, there's, it tastes like it's too sweet to me. And that's what it is. It's your palate is readjusting. And if you give 100% dark chocolate to anyone that's been eating a high sugar diet, they're probably not going to like it, no matter how good a quality that the chocolate is, for that reason. And then there's the autoimmune aspect of this. So the autoimmune paleo diet that we have both benefited from greatly and both use with our clients is a very beneficial elimination diet. And chocolate is certainly not included in that diet. But what do you think's going on here? Do you think it's really the chocolate, or do you think it's the dairy and the sugar maybe and the emulsifiers, So they put lettuce
Lots of other things in chocolate. Yeah, so which we can get to in a minute, like the types of things that get put into chocolate. But for AIP specifically, in autoimmune protocol specifically, you know, there's a couple reasons why chocolate is eliminated for a period of time. One is because it's a seed.
Right.
Cacao is a seed, right? And so as we know that seeds have lectins in them, and so we're taking away the lectins from the diet.
Right. But so does everything. Lectins are in everything. That's
why
I find
They're in everything. So it's, but they're really in high concentrations in nuts and seeds. And so that's part of the reason why they're taken out of the autoimmune protocol, so that you get a period of time of rest of not having to deal with those compounds in your GI tract. The other reason that cacao is in there is because it can be cross-reactive from an autoimmune standpoint to gliadin. So can coffee. So can a whole bunch of other foods, which is why Cyrex has a complete cross-reactive
array. I've seen that panel.
And that's specifically to figure out, has your immune system picked up antibodies to chocolate or coffee or, you know, Bruges yeast or all of those other things that could be causing your immune to have this always on overreactive fight mode all the time. So that's why it's in that as an elimination specifically. But when people reintroduce it, what I've found, and what I found for me actually, is when I reintroduced chocolate as a food to test, I was reintroducing 80% cacao, a good craft maker, right? So I knew it was cocoa beans and sugar. Those were the two ingredients. And I started to get some of my symptoms back, and I got very, very sad because I love cacao. And then it dawned on me, I wonder if it's the sugar, because I wasn't testing cacao as a single variable. I'd introduced two things. I introduced sugar and I introduced cacao.
It's hard. I mean, everything has ingredients. I mean, there's compounds in it. I mean, no thing is like a single.
Right. Yeah. Single variant analysis in functional medicine. Good luck.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So, So
maybe the bulletproof, the C8MCT oil, perhaps is like about as close as you get to a single ingredient.
So when I reintroduced 100% cacao, I realized I wasn't reacting to it and that it was the sugar. So that was a huge clue for me that for my autoimmune disease, sugar is a major driver for me to have a regression.
And then also, it's quite common to see soy as well.
Yeah, a lot of times emulsifiers are used. Soy lecithin is a very common emulsifier that's used. Soy is not a great compound if you're going to be eating tons and tons and tons of it.
Yeah.
So if you are on a one bar a day consumption habit, then having soy lecithin as a filler probably isn't the best thing for you.
You probably need to have a true allergy to soy before that was going to be a problem. It probably would never be an issue for a healthy person.
Yeah. I mean, soy, we do know, has estrogen-like compounds and can be an endocrine disruptor in that sense. So, but I mean, you've got to be eating edamame and soy, like soy sauce, and eating a lot of soy stuff for that kind of level to have that kind of an effect. But if it's a bar that you're eating a couple times a week and it has soy lecithin in it, I'm not really that worried about it.
Let's talk about the different types of chocolate manufacturers that exist. And You know, there's a number of companies that it's basically Hershey's or Cadbury's or something like that. Nestle, right. Yeah. So they're just kind of all under this same, umbrella industrialized food. And the fruition brands that I've become very fond of is not like those chocolates at all. And you certainly can't find, like, we can't buy this in the supermarket, right?
No. And so there's big food industry chocolate or big chocolate. Mm-hmm. And those are going to be the Cadbury's and the Nestle's and the Hershey's and those kinds of things. And then there's what's popping up a lot now across the globe are craft makers. Mm. And they're very much about small batch. They care about the quality of where the beans come from, how the people are treated that handle the beans, every step along the way, and usually about the quality ingredients. Now, it's become somewhat trendy to be a craft chocolate maker.
Right.
So this is where the lines get really blurred for the consumer, is they see this really beautiful package that's very smartly marketed.
Right.
And, you know, it's 80% chocolate and they're calling it themselves a craft maker. But when you look at the ingredients, if it's more than like three ingredients that are not cocoa beans and sugar, you're probably seeing things like cocoa mass, cocoa powder, cocoa butter. While yes, they are derivatives of cacao,
right?
But they've been highly processed. Mm. So that cocoa mass and cocoa powder, we don't know if it was Dutch processed.
Right.
Where did they get it from? Did they get it from the growers? No, they probably didn't.
Right.
They probably got it from a big conglomerate that's just putting a bunch of beans together and then processing it and selling off the parts is kind of what happens. And you had mentioned mouthfeel, like very dry and powdery, like mouthfeel of that baking chocolate.
It's a hallmark of a crap chocolate.
Total hallmark of a crap chocolate. And unfortunately, there are a lot of these craft small makers that are just getting started in cacao production, and this is how they're doing it. They're basically melting down ingredients and then letting them reform as bars. Whereas the craft makers that I've been really fond of and really enjoy their chocolate, they're getting the beans imported from the country of origin. They're working with the growers directly. They are they all use machines to grind, but they're grinding the beans themselves. They're doing the whole processing aside from the fermentation themselves. And so oftentimes a really good way to find out what the ingredients are is to look at the ingredients and does it say the word bean? Like that's total key. If it says cocoa beans, you've got something that's actually really good. If it says cocoa powder and cocoa butter, sure, it's probably not going to be that great.
You've got to be aware of some of these brands which are purporting to be craft chocolate makers, but they're not. They're really just in the wallpaper business.
Pretty much.
Is that the wrapper's going to look fancy, but what's inside is not all that. So talk to me about some of the ethical concerns then. And what have you read? What do you know about the ways that some of the workers are treated that are growing these cacao beans?
Yeah. So as you know, price drives everything, right? So, and to get something mass produced and mass consumed, the price needs to be low. And in order to do that, what will happen is these big companies will work with a number of farms across all different plantations, all different areas, for two reasons. One, to keep the cost low. Two, to keep the taste the same. A Hershey's bar will taste like a Hershey's bar will taste like a Hershey's bar. It doesn't really matter. These craft chocolate makers, for example, this fruition bar that you're selling, I'm not sure what batch you're getting, but they actually have the batch number.
They'll all be different.
Batch 3 tastes slightly different than batch 4 because there's so many different variables. Mm-hmm. But part of the downside of this big chocolate industry is that they're trying to cut the cost so much that the farmers get cut out of a lot of the money. There's a lot of middlemen involved. And in some countries, there's actually child slavery involved. And so, you know, it's kind of a dirty business. It's kind of what we saw with banana production and all of the other types of commodities that get really worldwide and a lot of high demand. We see a lot of that. So the craft makers here in the United States are definitely trying to work directly with the farms as much as possible. And the bars are going to cost more. And in my opinion, they taste better and everybody gets paid fairly. So it's part of the fair trade commission, but also, you know, it's really just knowing who the makers are and how they're treating the people that are involved in the chain of events.
Right. And is there a way to know, when you look at the wrapper on a chocolate, is there a way to know that it's been grown and harvested ethically?
There are some bars that you'll see, like a lot of the bars that you'll find in Whole Foods actually say fair trade.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they might be fair trade, but then you look at the ingredients and they're cocoa mass.
Right.
And cocoa butter. And so a portion of it should be fair trade, I'm sure. There are some certifications, but with these craft makers, it's really, right now there's no certification label on right. the bars and that kind of thing. It's really kind of getting to know the craft makers and asking them. It's right. just like going to the farmer's market and asking the farmer, do you use chemicals when they can't afford an organic certification? Same kind of thing. So it's really getting to know the people.
Yeah, we've seen that all the time at the farmer's market. You say, is this organic? He says, no, it's not organic certified. I grew this and I didn't put anything on it. You've got my word. I'm like, okay, that's probably, I mean, that's as good as you're going to get.
Yeah.
I think these companies have great transparency as well, don't they? They like to put their stuff outside. Usually they have like shops that you can go and visit and they like you to see them like actually doing what they do. I've certainly seen that at Mutari. So there's a local place here in Santa Cruz, a local bean to bar, just recently become a bean to bar maker. And I've seen the guy sat there like sorting through the cocoa beans and like they want you to know that they're doing the right thing. And so if you ask them, I'm sure they will answer those questions.
Yeah. You know, and there's in a lot of cities, there are shops popping up that you'll find that are carrying these really good makers mm-hmm. and you'll start to notice the same makers over and over. Portland has a couple of them, for example, one's called The Meadow, the other one's called Cacao. Palo Alto has the Chocolate Garage.
Right.
You know, there's those types of stores that are popping up that will not only educate you about the different makers, and they're going to know for sure whether or not they're an ethical producer, but there are also these shops that are going to carry only the best bars in the world.
Right.
So that's a really good place to start. And once you start to know like which makers you like, make a road trip out of it.
Right.
You know, and go visit some of these makers. We did that on our last road trip. We visited two makers while we were touring the Pacific Northwest. And it was a lot of fun to get to know them. And
do you see Willy Wonka?
I did not see Willy Wonka, but we saw some of the equipment in the Willy Wonka factory for sure.
I should link to the Chocolate Garage as well. I think they do. I mean, that's basically what they do, right? Is they, because this is such a difficult industry to navigate, they do that for you. And you know that when you're buying chocolate from them, that it's going to be a craft made, good quality bar that's made without ethical concerns. And so, yeah, I should link to them too, because I know that not that the 100% bar that I'm selling is not going to be for everyone. And there's a chance it will go away, right? I mean, that was kind of one of your concerns when I said, oh, I'm going to open a wholesale account with Fruition. You know, that was your first question. It's like, do you know if they can keep up with demand? Because it is, you know, made in small batches.
Small batches, yeah.
If all of the people that listen to this podcast leave me a 5-star review on iTunes, not only am I going to be very broke, but also Fruition are going to run out of chocolate. So that's I could right. end up creating a huge problem for myself.
You know, Chocolate Garage is great. And I have to give Sunita a big round of credit because I really learned a lot about the chocolate industry
from
her. Oh, I see.
Her. Interesting.
And she really, like her whole purpose of her business is bringing transparency to the chocolate industry to mass consumers. Like the fact that there's slavery still involved is, you know, we shouldn't be in this
right.
day and age. Right. So, she's definitely all about having transparency and really understanding the makers and how they do their whole process.
Would I miss anything?
I don't think so. Except for the chocolate tasting itself.
Chocolate tasting.
Yeah.
It's not really for audio, is it?
No, not really, unless you want to hear, yeah, no, probably not commendation.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So yeah. This Fruition bar, 100% bar, I think it's fantastic. And like I said, I'm selling it. I'll be giving it away. What other bars do you like, Tareya?
For 100%, there's a number of bars that I like. The Fruition bar is very good. Mutari just did 100% bar. This is now Mutari is a brand new craft maker on the scene, and getting bars right the first time they pour bars is really, really difficult. They actually did a fairly decent job.
Yeah.
They all have growth to do, like all craft makers are continually in craft. Mutari has a good bar. I think you can get them online. I'm not sure yet.
I will link to this in the show notes, obviously.
And then there are a couple makers that I really like. Francois Pralou is a French maker, and he has a 100% bar. Now, what's interesting about his bar is that not only does he use cocoa beans alone, but he uses cocoa beans and then adds additional cocoa butter for that mouthfeel piece of it. And it's strictly for mouthfeel. It's not because he's trying to reduce the percentage or anything like that. Right. It's just for mouthfeel. There's another maker that's an Italian maker actually called Demori, and they have 100% bar that I really love. And then Grenada is a really great maker. They are interesting in that I think they're still the only chocolate maker that is 100% solar powered, for one. And they were one of the first makers that are bean to bar in country, meaning they grow the beans and manufacture the bars in the same country of origin. So everything in Grenada is done in Grenada. There's another one, Maru Chocolate, they're in Vietnam. They're also in country. They don't make 100% bar, but they make a really good 80% bar. But Grenada is also another one that I really love.
Yeah, I really, really like the Grenada 100%. And we found it in local supermarkets, but my understanding is they've lost their US distributor and that they're working on that. So you might not be able to get it in the US right now, but hopefully in the future.
Yeah, and you know, remember that these companies are really small. Oftentimes they're like a handful of people.
Yeah.
And Grenada has been through a lot of really big ruts in the road lately. They lost their founder.
Yeah. Did he electrocute himself?
There was an electrocution accident at the factory. Yep. And they lost him to that.
Really sad.
Accident. It was really, really sad. A huge blow to the chocolate industry. And now with the US distributor, that's definitely giving them a bit of an issue, but they'll work through it. You know, there's,
they'll be back. Yeah. They'll be back. It'll change. It won't always be this one company. It'll be constantly changing is my guess. And I hope that people support these companies because I think they're doing good work. And
I think so.
I think that chocolate
Why not enjoy chocolate the way it was meant to be?
I know. It's been hijacked. That's really the purpose of this podcast. Like, you don't have to buy chocolate from me. Just know that chocolate has been freaking bought and hijacked and bastardized. And really good chocolate does exist out there. You just need to put in a little bit more effort to find
it. It's going to be really hard to find it in Whole Foods.
It's going to be hard to find it anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. There's one maker in Whole Foods that I really love, Dick Taylor. They're out of Arcata, California. Cocoa beans and sugar. They don't have a 100% bar, but they do have a couple of 80% bars that are very good. Dick Taylor, cross my fingers and knock on wood, like, they've been able to build up their business enough to produce enough quantity to be able to be in Whole Foods without reducing the quality of their chocolate, which is so hard to do. So hopefully they'll find the, you know, whatever magic mix that is of production to be able to do that so that we can see more and more of it. Because most of the stuff at Whole Foods is probably going to be cocoa mass or cocoa powder, and it's going to be pretty much rubbish.
Yeah. Not even the big, you know, there's some of these big paleo retail stores that are popping up online.
I see that a lot.
Yeah, and they're selling chocolate with stevia in it, like sugar alcohols and stuff. Like, there's no way that's going to be a good quality chocolate if it's got some kind of sugar alcohol in it. And it's masking the problem, right? You just need to let your palate adjust, and then normal things of normal sweetness will taste normal sweetness, right? And you won't need the goddamn sugar alcohols to make it taste palatable. So yeah, I would avoid those too. Okay, well, I think that's about it. So yeah, head over to iTunes. I'm going to leave a link to a video in the show notes because it's a little bit tricky leaving a review in iTunes. They don't make it particularly easy for you, but once you have these instructions, it'll be really easy. So leave me a 5-star review in iTunes. Send me your shipping address. And it's got to be a US shipping address. I'm sorry, if you're listening to this and you're in Iceland or the UK, then I can't afford to send you chocolate to those places. So US only shipping addresses, send them to support@nourishbalancedive.com. And I will send you a bar of Fruition 100% dark chocolate. That's it. Thank you.
See you next time.